So I wonder if you've ever felt really left out. Your friends have all been away somewhere and had a brilliant time and you hadn't been able to go with them. Or maybe there's been a big family gathering that somehow you missed and so you were left out. And what's now even worse, your friends and family continue to be so excited about the good time they had that they won't stop talking about it. And the more they talk about it, the more you feel left out. There's stuff happening, and you're just not part of it. That's what happened to Thomas. And I think I've always felt a bit sorry for him. Doubting Thomas, he's called. And I'm not sure that's very fair. Why would he be called Doubting Thomas when Peter isn't known as denying Peter? And some of the other disciples could probably be described in a worse way, maybe as deserters. But that's how Thomas has become known. Now, last week, we thought about how on the evening of that first Easter day, the day when Jesus rose from the dead, most of the disciples were together. Only Thomas was missing. And suddenly, Jesus was standing there among them. Jesus, the Jesus they'd seen crucified, whose body they'd seen put in Joseph's tomb, was standing there. It was wonderful. They were overjoyed, thrilled. Jesus had indeed risen from the dead, and here he was, come back to them. How amazing. What a miraculous thing to have happened. And even more, he told them that he was sending them out in the same way that he'd been sent out by the Father, and he breathed the Holy Spirit into them. That was quite an experience that Thomas missed. And you imagine how the rest of the disciples would have been totally full of it, unable to speak about anything else, brimming over with excitement and wonder. They'd been together for 3 years and they'd shared many experiences. But this time, Thomas was left out. Well, from what little we know of Thomas, I suspect that the cross was really only what he'd expected. There are two other places in John's Gospel where we learn something about him. In John chapter 11, we read that when Jesus proposed going back to Judea after he had heard the news of Lazarus's death, the disciples said to him, "Lord, a little time ago the Jews tried to stone you. Surely you don't want to go back there." They thought at that point that Jesus would be going to his death if he returned to Jerusalem, and so they tried to stop him. But one voice spoke up. Thomas said, "Come on then, let's go too. We might as well die with him." Thomas expected the worst. He was a natural pessimist, but he was also very loyal. He didn't lack courage. And he loved Jesus enough to be willing to go to Jerusalem and die with him when the other disciples were hesitant and afraid. He was also very honest, sometimes to the point of bluntness. The other time we meet him in John's Gospel is in chapter 14, the well-known passage where Jesus says to his disciples, "In my Father's house are many rooms. I'm going there to prepare a place for you, and you know the way to the place where I'm going." And you can picture the disciples all thinking that they haven't the faintest clue what Jesus is talking about. But it's Thomas who speaks up and says, "Master, we have no idea where you're going. So how do you expect us to know the way?" He was the one at this point who said what all the others were probably thinking. One of the commentators describes it this way: at this moment, the disciples were bewildered men, but there was one among them who could never say that he understood what he didn't understand, and that was Thomas. He was far too honest and far too much in earnest to be satisfied with any vague, pious expressions. Thomas had to be sure, so he expressed his doubts and his failure to understand. We don't know why Thomas wasn't there that evening when Jesus appeared to the other disciples, but he wasn't. And when the others told him all about it, and you imagine them telling the story at great length and with huge excitement, Thomas said, "I won't believe it till I see it myself. Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand in his side, I will not believe it." Stubborn and skeptical, and maybe feeling a bit left out. Tom Wright says of him, "This doer, dogged disciple who suggested they might as well go with Jesus if only to die with him, who complained that Jesus hadn't made things anything like clear enough, just happened to be the one who was somewhere else on the first Easter day. He sees the others excited, elated, unable to contain their joy, but he's not going to be taken in." But a week later, and exactly a week later, Jesus comes to his disciples again, just as he did before. The disciples are in the same room, and again the door is locked. And this time, Thomas is there. A week later, the stubborn disciple who is determined not to believe anything until he's got solid evidence is confronted by a Jesus who has somehow appeared through a locked door. And Jesus gives Thomas the evidence that he wanted. "Put your finger here," he said to Thomas. "Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." "Here's the evidence you wanted, Thomas. You can touch the wounds just as you wanted to." But actually, there's no suggestion that Thomas did that. No indication that he did reach out his hand and touch the wounds of Jesus before he believed. He didn't need to. All his doubts vanished instantly as he worshipped Jesus. "My Lord and my God," he said. Thomas moved instantly from doubt to worship. There's a lot of ancient testimony that suggests that Thomas carried the gospel to India. There's a small hill near the airport in Chennai where Thomas is said to have been buried. There are churches in South India who trace their roots right back to the very beginning of the church age, and their tradition says that they were founded under the ministry of Thomas. And there are strong traditions to the effect that he died a martyr for his faith in Jesus. We shouldn't just think of him as doubting Thomas. Maybe instead he could be called worshipping Thomas, because he turned out to be really quite an inspiring figure. So what can we learn from this story? Well, the first thing that struck me as I was looking at it was how Jesus comes to us with kindness. In this series about the appearances of Jesus after his resurrection, we've seen how he dealt with grief as he appeared to Mary Magdalene, and with disappointment as he appeared to Cleopas and his companion on the road to Emmaus. We saw last week how gracious he was to the other disciples when he appeared to them. No rebuke for running away, no criticism of Peter for his denials, but only reassurance and the word of peace. Different stories, but each of them Jesus meeting with people where they were, responding to their needs, speaking the words that each of them needed to hear. He was incredibly gracious to Thomas too. I love that when he appeared to Thomas, it was like a replica of his appearance to the other disciples, exactly a week later, when they were together in the same room. And again he appears through a locked door, and again he says, "Peace be with you." As though he understood that Thomas was feeling he'd missed out. And there's no stern rebuke, no lecture about how Thomas should have known better and had more faith. Just kindness. And that's how he meets with us too, just where we are, with our particular needs, our griefs, our disappointments, our fears. Wherever we are in our lives and in our walk, he meets with us with kindness. And he loves us, even with our doubts. I don't think that Thomas turned out to be a surprise to Jesus. I don't think that when Jesus called his disciples, he was in any doubt about the men he was getting. He didn't do a rigorous recruitment process with a job description and person specification and psychometric testing and all the stuff of modern recruitment practices. He didn't need to. Jesus could see right inside people, and he knew what these men were like, these 12 disciples that he called to follow him. So I don't think it was a surprise to him to discover that Thomas was a bit grumpy, a bit of a pessimist, a plain speaker, pretty stubborn, but also intensely loyal and courageous. That was who Thomas was, and Jesus loved him. He knows us too, better than we know ourselves, and he loves us. And I don't think that Jesus was surprised by his doubts. He simply offered the proof that Thomas needed for his doubt to be dispelled. "Here is the evidence you wanted, Thomas," Jesus said to him. "Now you can stop doubting and believe." We all have doubts. We all have things we struggle with about the Christian faith and how to trust God when times are difficult and what it means to follow Christ and to serve him. And just as Jesus knew Thomas's doubts, he knows our doubts without us having to tell him. and he can deal with our doubts too. He might not do so immediately. Thomas had to wait a whole week before Jesus appeared to him, a whole week of listening to the other 10 going on and on about what they had experienced. Why did Jesus leave him for a week when he could have appeared to him at any time? I don't know, except that God does what God does in his time, not in ours. When we come to him with our doubts, we may not get an instant answer, but we can trust him to give us the answer he knows we need in his perfect time. There's a story in Mark's gospel about a man who brought his son to Jesus for healing. When Jesus said to him, "Everything's possible for someone who believes," the man cried out, "I do believe. Help me in my unbelief." And that, I think, is where most of us are much of the time. Jesus accepted that honest confession of a mixture of faith and doubt and answered the man's prayer and healed his son. He can cope with our doubts because he loves us. And the third thing that we pick up from this passage is that we are more blessed than those disciples were. When doubts trouble us, and I suspect we all have our moments, do we think that it would have been wonderful to have been able to see the risen Jesus as the disciples did, to have been there with Thomas and to see the actual physical proof? Then we would be absolutely certain. Wouldn't that be great? But Jesus said to Thomas, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." The message says, "So you believe because you've seen with your own eyes. Even better blessings are in store for those who believe without seeing."